On the face of it, well-respected government official, dutiful husband, and in later life, Member of Parliament. On the other side, he took his sexual pleasures wherever he could find them, taking advantage of women throughout the period of his documented diaries. We look at a man that, if he had lived these days, might well have been locked up in prison for his actions. In today's episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, dear listeners, we look at Samuel Pepys and his women. Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. Some episodes I talk about doing, and then just never get around to doing them. I actually have about 200 episodes in various stages of completion, mostly a paragraph or an idea. A long time back, I did an episode on mistresses, and I talked about doing an episode on Samuel Pepys's women. Well, the day has arrived. And I don't normally say listener caution is advised, but in order to do Pepys's diary justice, I have to read it exactly what he wrote, and the diary contains more sex than 50 Shades of Grey. So proceed at your own discretion. Samuel Pepys's importance to historians worldwide cannot be understated. This was a man who lived and documented daily life in London in the 1660s. He lived through a plague. He famously buried his precious wheel of Parmesan under his garden when the Great Fire of London was approaching his home. And he witnessed the first Punch and Judy show in London, and he met and served royalty. He kept his diary from the years 1660 to 1669. He never intended it to be published, and to prevent prying eyes reading it, he wrote it in a mix of English, French, Latin, and shorthand. After his death, the diaries and his other collection of books eventually found their way to Magdalene College, Cambridge, where he had studied. The first translation of his diary was when John Smith, later the rector of St. Mary the Virgin in Baldock, was engaged to transcribe the diaries into plain English. And he laboured at this task for 3 years, from 1819 to 1822, unaware, until nearly finished, that a key to the shorthand system was stored in Pepys's library, a few shelves above the diary volumes. The diaries were first published in two volumes in 1825, and have never been out of print since. They paint a picture of London life that's proved invaluable to our historical understanding of the political, theatrical, and everyday life in the Restoration period. However, the stories and incidents of his love life were so explicit that they weren't published in full until much later. When editions of the diary were published during the 19th and early 20th centuries, the offending passages were simply excluded. So now, although we can understand the importance of the man, it's not really what we're here for. Whilst he brought us so much understanding of a time period, as we know, his diaries were never meant to be published, and perhaps this is why they're so candid. This is a man who sexually manipulated women in a way that we probably nowadays look at Harvey Weinstein, and although age is not mentioned, no doubt some of these females are far too young. Others, he clearly pushes past any gentlemanly propriety. He was essentially a sex pest at best, but certainly would be deemed a sexual predator in these days. And for you women, If the thought of being molested by Weinstein sounds disgusting, and it is, he did, perhaps, maybe have only one massive advantage over Pepys. Only once in his diaries does Pepys record having a bath. This is when he ventures to the spa town of Bath and takes the Roman baths. And what Pepys actually says about the bathing is negative. His diary from the 13th of June 1668 reads, "Up at 4 o'clock, being by appointment called to the Cross Bath, where we were carried, one after one another, myself and wife, and Betty Turner, Willett, and W. Hewer, and by and by, although we designed to have done before company come, much company come, very fine ladies, and the manner pretty enough, only methinks it cannot be clean to go so many bodies together in the same water." So, we can say that he probably wasn't the cleanest of men, and his habits, nighttime ablutions, were for the chamber pot. We read the following account in 1665, when he's staying at a friend's house, revolting indeed to modern sentiments. "And so I to bed, and in the night was mightily troubled with a looseness, I suppose from some fresh damp linen that I put on this night, and feeling for a chamber pot, there was none. I having called up the maid out of her bed, she had forgot, I suppose, to put one there, so I was forced in this strange house to rise and shit in the chimney twice, and so to bed, and was very well again." But if Pepys wasn't fastidious about hygiene, was anyone else? Indeed, he notes, "Mrs. Middleton is noted for carrying about her body a continued sewer base smell that's very offensive, especially if she be a little hot." Samuel married Elizabeth Pepys, the daughter of a French Huguenot. She was married at 14 years old. Pepys is intensely jealous of his beautiful wife, especially when he employs a dancing master for her at her request. This will not stop Pepys from having sexual encounters with other women in the course of his diaries, and indeed, with the young companions he employs for Mrs. Pepys, who is evidently quite lonely. No big surprise, since, as when Pepys isn't working, he pursues many interests, mostly outside his marital home. Pepys was short, at 5'1", or 155 centimetres, compared to the average of 5'5", or 167 centimetres, for men in Restoration times. But if we at best consider Pepys's sexual behaviours dubious, as a juxtaposition, let's consider the sexual morals of females in 17th century England, as, although girls were expected to remain virgins until after their wedding day, sources claim that approximately 25% were pregnant at the time of their wedding. Therefore, perhaps, we can surmise that women really weren't the innocent maidens that some historians would have us believe. But let's get back to the villain of our story. He attended church, but was a man of such contradictions, as we see from his documented church-going adventures. In 1667, he acquired a perspective glass, or what we know now as a telescope, albeit a small one. And on the 26th of May, he recorded, "After dinner, I by water alone to Westminster, to the parish church, and there did entertain myself with my perspective glass up and down the church, by which I had the great pleasure of seeing and gazing at many fine women." Sometimes during the course of his diaries, Pepys would become obsessed with watching one particular woman, even to the extent of engaging what would we now regard as stalking. These obsessions often lasted for years. For example, his fixation for a well-known beauty of the time, quotes. And just by the window that I stood at, there sat Mrs. Butler, the great beauty. And in the afternoon, to Henry VII's chapel, where I heard a sermon and spent, God forgive me, most of my time in looking upon Mrs. Butler. The references continue in abundance every time he sees her, or makes an opportunity to see her. To our own church in the forenoon, and in the afternoon to Clerkenwell Church, St. James the Less, only to see the two fair butlers, i.e. Mrs. Butler and her sister. And I happened to be placed in the pew where they afterwards came to sit, but the pew, by their coming, became too full. I went out into the next and sat and had my full view of them. And thence to Clerkenwell Church, and there, as I wished, sat next pew to the fair butler, who is indeed the most perfect beauty still, and one I do very much admire myself for my choice in her for a beauty, she having the best lower part of a face that ever I saw all the days of my life. And he continues, and so walked out to St. James's Church, thinking to have seen fair Mrs. Butler, but could not, she not being there, nor, I believe, lives thereabouts now. Pepys is still stalking the lovely Mrs. Butler 8 years after the first diary entry referencing her. And so, over the fields to Clerkenwell, to see whether I could find the fair Butlers do still live there. Pornography isn't a modern invention, and to this end, we see Pepys buying and reading a book. Quote, and I to my chamber, where I did read through Le Chals de Filles, Girl School. A lewd book, but what doth me no wrong to read for information's sake, but it did make my prick to stand all the while, and made me have an orgasm, and after I'd done it, I burned it, that it might not be amongst my books to my shame. But to his shame, Pepys will take his opportunities wherever he can find them, and he also has a number of longer-term affairs with married women. Pepys meets Betty Lane, who worked in Westminster Hall, where she ran a draper's stall. She subsequently marries Mr. Martin, but this does not change the nature of their dalliances. Quote, met her at her chamber, and there did what I would, and so away home. And it seems she could be had for some lobster, as we see from a diary entry in 1663. With one word, I got her to go with me to meet at the further Rhenish winehouse, where I did give her a lobster, and touse her, and feel her all over, making her believe how fair and good skin she had. And indeed, she had a very white thigh and leg, but monstrous fat. The diaries contain over 100 references to Mrs. Martin, more often than not, along the lines of, I did what I would with her. Betty had a sister, the widow Doll Pell, who seems as accommodating to Pepys's sexual advances as her sister. There are 28 references to her in her diary. She is described as having a bad face, but a good body. And at around the same time, the lusty Pepys is seeing a Mrs. Betty Mitchell. I, to St. Margaret's Westminster, and there saw at church my pretty Betty Mitchell, and thence to the Abbey, and so to Mrs. Martin, and there did what I would with her, both forward and backward, which is also my great pleasure. But if this paints Pepys as London's very own Casanova, not all women were as welcoming. I walked towards Whitehall, but being wearied, turned into St. Dunstan's Church, where I heard an able sermon by the minister of the place, and stood by a pretty modest maid, whom I did labour to take by the hand and the body, but she would not, but got further and further away from me, and at last I could perceive her take her pins out of her pocket to prick me should I touch her again, which seeing I did forbear, and was glad I did spy on her design. And then I fell to gaze upon another pretty maid in a pew close by, and she on me, and I did go about to take her hand, which she suffered a little, then withdrew. In December 1664, Pepys had a slight bit of conscience about his outrageous behaviour. To church, where, God forgive me, I spent most of my time in looking at my new morena on the other side of the church. But no, another Sunday, and to Captain Cox. But he, I found, had sent for me to come to Mrs. Pennington's, and there I went, and we were very merry and supped, and Cox being sleepy, he went away bedtimes. I stayed alone and talking and playing with her till past midnight, she suffering me to do whatever I wanted with her breasts. I had almost led her by discourse to make her touch my bare penis, which she did almost, and did not refuse. Mostly Pepys keeps his indiscretions away from his wife, but sometimes he gets fixated with a female and just can't help himself, as with his cookmaid Nell. We are never told just how young Nell is, but watch his lust, guilt, and remorse all play a part in almost consecutive day entries. I stayed at home busy and did show some dalliance to my maid Nell, speaking to her of her sweetheart, which she had, silly girly. Diary, 16th of June, 1667. I have lately played the fool much with her Nell in playing with her breasts. 17th of June. Up and did this morning dally with Nell and touched her thing, which she was afterwards troubled for. 18th of June. I into my closet and there slept a little, and do now almost every day after dinner, and then after dallying a little with Nell, which I am ashamed to think of, away to the office. 20th of June. I to my chamber, and there dallied a little with my maid Nell, to touch her thing, but nothing more. 21st of June. His servants tended not to last long in his employ. Indeed, 32 different servants are recorded of being in his household in the 9 years of his diary. But I'm sure the Pepys's household would scarcely differ from many other Restoration households. In molestation of servants, waitresses and bar staff, it seems, being the norm, and it's sad to say, accepted part of the job. Some women were well above his station, but he did what Pepys would do, watch and lust from afar. Lady Castlemaine is Charles II's mistress, and Pepys is so taken by her that he buys 3 portraits of her, and even leches over the sight of her underwear on the washing line, quote, and in the privy garden saw the finest smocks and linen petticoats of my Lady Castlemaine's, laced with rich lace at the bottom, that I ever saw, and it did me good to look upon them. But when it came to his opportunities, Pepys had no real shame. He was the administrator for the Royal Navy, and in a position to help people's careers or to help them receive financial aid. To this end, in 1665, he, quote, saw the widow of another Navy lieutenant killed in action earlier in the year. This day I was come to by Mrs. Burroughs of Westminster. Lieutenant Burroughs, lately dead, his wife, a most pretty woman, and my old acquaintance. I had a kiss or two of her, and a modest woman she is. And of a heavily pregnant lieutenant's wife, coming home and going to bed, the boy tells me that his sister, Mrs. Daniels, has provided me a supper of little birds killed by her husband. I made her sup with me. and after supper were alone a great while, and I had the pleasure of her lips, she being a pretty woman, and one whom a great belly becomes as well as ever I saw any. Incredulously, Pepys is appalled to see women treated like sex objects by other men, as we see in 1667. Quote, amongst others, there were two pretty women walking alone, and they walked a great while, which being discovered by some idle gentlemen, they would take up needs with them. But to see the poor ladies, how they were put to it to run away from them, and they after them, and sometimes the ladies put themselves along with other company, then the other drew back, I was troubled to see them abused so, and could have found it in my heart, as little desire of fighting as I have, to have protected the ladies. And his double standards continue when in 1666, he hears a story of an attempted sexual coercion and what would have been rape by his colleague, the Admiralty and staunch Puritan John Creed. Quote, an odd story lately told of him, for a great truth, of his endeavouring to lie with a woman at Oxford, and her crying out saved her. And this being publicly known, doth a little make me hate him. And yet, this man of contradictions writes, quote, this night late, in my coach coming up Ludgate Hill, I saw two gallants and their footmen taking a pretty wench, who I've very much eyed lately, set up shop upon the hill, a seller of ribband and gloves. They seemed to drag her by some force, but the wench went, and I believe had her turn served. But God forgive me, what thoughts and wishes I had of being in their place. And in 1667, Frances Udall was working at her uncle's tavern, the Swan, and it seems she had to repeatedly fend off Pepys. Pepys, by his own writing, would have been found guilty of sexual offences had he lived in a later age. On 9th of April, the little girl was angry when Pepys made her touch his penis, but he gave her money, and so, he said, all well. On the 20th of May, he tried tumbling of la little filly, and was ashamed when her uncle walked in and found her with her neckcloth off. Tumbling means pushed over. But give Pepys some time and he's back. 30th September, he tries again, quote, to the Swan, and there I did fling down the girl there upon the chair, and did touch her thigh with my hand, which she then began to cry out. So I left off and drank, and away to the hall. Fling down the girl suggests sexual assault with violence. Indeed, when Mrs. Martin's sister Doll tells Pepys she'd been flung down by another man, she means essentially rape. And Pepys's attitude to Doll's assault were dismissive, as, quote, she hath suffered me to do anything I want with her 100 times. But not all men thought the same way. The 17th century Lord Chief Justice, Sir Matthew Hale, summed up his thoughts on rape in words that certainly hold true today. Quote, it is true that rape is a most detestable crime, and therefore ought severely and impartially to be punished with death. But it must be remembered that it is an accusation easy to make, hard to prove, and harder to be defended by the party accused, though innocent. In the 17th century, there was an average of 2 trials for rape seen at London courts a year, and these certainly didn't involve upper-class gentlemen. So it's perhaps because of this knowledge that encourages and emboldens Pepys's nefarious activities. London was certainly a relatively small place, and Pepys clearly an influential man, that even the ladies of class that were the victims of Pepys wouldn't want to risk their reputation by a public trial. Even if they won, what would they achieve? Their status and social life would be in tatters. Ask for the servant girls. Who would believe such a lowly woman's word against a church-going gentleman? Certainly, through the courses of his diaries, Pepys becomes more brazen, and his only real fears are his wife finding out about his indiscretions. But as for domestic life, he wasn't averse to marital violence, as we see from his entry on the 5th of April, 1664. Home myself, where I find my wife dressed as though she'd been abroad, but I think she was not. But she answering me in some way that I did not like, I pulled her by the nose, indeed to offend her, although afterwards to appease her, I denied it, but only it was done in haste. The poor wretch took it mighty ill, and I believe, besides wringing her nose, she did feel pain, and so cried for a great while. And by, I made her friends, and so to supper, to my office a while, and then home to bed. Midway through his diaries, Pepys visits a brothel in April 1664, and we read, "I forward to Fleet Street, and called it Fleet Alley, containing a wicked house, not knowing how to command myself, and went in there and saw what formerly I might have been acquainted with, the wickedness of these houses, and the forcing of a man to present expense. The woman, indeed, is a most lovely woman, but I had no courage to meddle with her for fear of her not being so wholesome. And so, counterfeiting that I had not money enough, it was pretty to see how cunning she was, would not suffer me to have anything to do in any manner with her, that she saw I had no money, and told me I would not come again, but she now was sure I would come again. I hope in God I shall not, for though she be one of the prettiest women I ever saw, yet I fear her abusing me. So desiring God to forgive me for this vanity, I went home, taking some books from my bookseller, and taking his lad home with me, to whom I paid £10 for the books I have laid up money for, and laid out these for 3 weeks, and shall do no more a great while, I hope. So to my office, writing letters, and then home to bed, weary of the pleasure I have had today, and ashamed to think of it." This is early Pepys, and he's scared of a brothel. He's tempted, but he sees these women as unclean, and so he looks elsewhere. And certainly his shame doesn't last long, as he starts an affair with a Mrs. Bagshaw, who asks Pepys' help to further her husband's naval career. Pepys obliges, and Mrs. Bagshaw obliges. He also makes a pass at his barber's maid, as we read, "I long for her with great love and passion." He's rebuffed. Sensible lass indeed. He's also rebuffed by a Mrs. Knipp, an actress who he becomes besotted, maybe due to the refusal of his advances, and she's mentioned over 100 times between 1665 and 69. The benefit for him having affairs with married naval wives is twofold. As married women, they aren't going to cause any bother, as they stand to be destitute by the marriage laws. And secondly, their husband jobs take them away abroad for long periods of time. Very convenient indeed. We see this in 1665, thence to Mrs. Martin, who, though her husband has gone away like a fool into France, yet as simple as wanton as she ever was, and much I made myself merry and away. In 1668, he even indulges with the wife of an admiral. After her feet get wet, he notes, "We did send for a pair of old shoes for Mrs. Lowther, and there I did pull off the others and put them on, and did endeavour to touch her thigh, but she had drawers on, but I did kiss her and touch her breasts." Near the end of his diaries, It seems almost no females off limits to the lustful Mr. Pepys, as we see in May 1669, when he goes to visit Mrs. Mitchell, but finds her not at home, but her mother is. "Where I have not been for many a day, and now I met her mother there, and knew her husband to be out of town, and here I did kiss her, and have not an opportunity to do more with her, as I would have offered it, had I had it." And no race would have been off limits to Pepys, had he had the opportunity at theatre. She is a black actress, in the same company of players as Nell Gwynn. Mrs. Hall is my little Roman-nosed black girl that is mighty pretty. She's usually called Betty. And so on and so on. Pepys has many other encounters with women, but unless I was to break this into a multi-part episode, I think we have a picture of his MO. Perhaps taking only sections of a 9-year diary, it paints a picture of a man who only thought about sex all day. The reality really isn't true. The diary contains references and interactions with 2,835 different people, from princes to paupers, of which only 470 are women. Therefore, for historians, it paints a layered picture of life in Restoration times. The diary really is a wonderful read, with description of England's war against Holland, living through the plague, the Great Fire, theatre life, pubs, coffee shops, basically an everyday life in the 1660s. And if he had omitted his sexual escapades, the diaries would have been a shadow of what they are, more in an accountant-type view than a personal diary. Was his behaviour out of norms for men of his time? Perhaps we'll never know, but perhaps we just want to take a look at another man of his times, and the King, Charles II, who had over a dozen illegitimate children with 7 mistresses. So, perhaps not. But it's certainly interesting, however, how Pepys was viewed by his peers. There is no better example than this than his friend John Evelyn, a writer and also a diarist. Pepys' sexual encounters are evidently unknown to Evelyn, as we see written in his diary when Pepys dies on the 26th of May, 1703. Quote, "This day died Mr. Samuel Pepys, a very worthy, industrious and curious person, none in England exceeding him in the knowledge of the navy, in which he had passed through most of the considerable offices, clerk of the acts, and secretary of the admiralty, all of which he performed with great integrity. He was universally beloved, hospitable, generous, learned in many things, skilled in music, a very great cherisher of learned men, of whom he had conversation." So, a hidden sexual predator in plain sight? How would Pepys have fared in today's age? We've finally reached an age where the likes of R. Kelly, Harvey Weinstein, Rolf Harris being jailed, and actors like Kevin Spacey facing multiple charges of sexual assault. But as we've seen from the 12 cases the UK Crime Prosecution Service charged Spacey with, just how hard it is to make accusations stick. And it was made evident when 3 cases were dropped and he was found not guilty on 9 other charges in 2023. Is Spacey guilty or innocent? In regards to legality, he's certainly been found not guilty, but many people certainly raised eyebrows at the charges brought against him. And no clearer case of predators in plain sight was the case of DJ and children's presenter Jimmy Savile, who had been knighted and adored by generations of children, some of whom he took advantage of, bringing them onto his shows and then sexually abusing them. Clearly, every generation has its sexual predators. How do we deal with them? That, my dear listeners, is certainly an ongoing political, social, and judicial question that is, and will continue to be, ongoing. Well, that's it for another episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I hope you enjoyed that one. If you did, please like, subscribe, and till the next episode, bye-bye.